Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Fred Film Radio, this is Dana Knight reporting from the 64th edition of Berlin Film Festival, and I'm here with Gina Kim, who directed a film called Final Recipe that is playing in the culinary section of the Berlin Film Festival. Gina, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you too.
Before we tackle the film, I know you made four other films before in a short that got a lot of attention. Could you please tell me a few things about those films first?
Sure. To begin with, I was here 11 years ago at Berlin Film Festival, a forum section. The film that I played here back then was called Gina Kim's Video Diary. It was a video diary piece or experimental documentary, depending on how you label it. Feature length. So that really was the first feature length film that I did. And after that, I made The Invisible Light, which was fictional narrative film. And then after that, I made Never Forever, starring Vera Farmiga and also Ha Jung-woo, the Korean star, set in New York. So that was another feature. And then after that, I made Faces of Seoul. It's a video documentary essay type of film which played at Venice. And here I am, back in Berlin with Final Recipe, which I'm really, really happy and honored about.
That's great. I know that in your other films you focus on issues of gender, sexuality, even Asian stereotyping. Mm-hmm. You have a particular problem with that. Mm-hmm. This is a film about food, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering, is it possible that you tackle maybe the same themes from a different angle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all of my films deal with the same topic in a broader, larger perspective, because I usually try to break the binary division of these precepts, like, you know, female body and man's desire and this language thing, like language division and Asia versus the West, East versus West, and those kind of things. And in this film as well, I think I was trying to achieve something of reintegration of these two separated culture, which is like East and the West, by depicting Asia in its truest sense through food and family, but then utilizing the language of English, which is basically one of the most important Western language, modern language, and try to kind of make some sort of reconciliation between the two culture, if you will.
Tell us a few things about the story.
So this film is a coming-of-age story about a boy who enters a very prestigious culinary competition to save his grandfather's restaurant. And somewhere along the line, other more important things happens, and he finds out about his true family and his background and everything. This film is definitely about food and cooking, but ultimately it's really about love and forgiveness, so
and
to speak.
Family.
Yes, family, absolutely.
Yeah, very important.
Yes, family and food, we always joke about it. Those are the two important efforts for any Asian family, any Asians, and as well as everybody in the world, I think. Those are really the two important elements of our lives.
Some universal principles that unite us all.
Totally.
Yeah. Tell me a few things about the cast. I know it's very diverse.
Mm-hmm. Casting was the most challenging part of all, because we wanted it to be a Pan-Asian film, meaning a lot of contestants featured in my film will come from different backgrounds: Australia, France, Japan, Canada, Seoul, Korea, LA, New York, Vancouver, everywhere, Thailand. And we actually, maybe it was stupid of me, but we actually wanted to stay really truthful, because I can't tell the difference between, like, you know, Thai accent when they speak English and then Singaporean accent. They have all different accent when they speak English, and they have different type of demeanor. So I really wanted to make a truthful representation of these people. And because of that, we actually had to fly these actors in to be starred in my film, which was a logistic nightmare for my producers, but I think it was rewarding, yes.
How did you work with them? What acting instructions did you give them?
First of all, they are from different backgrounds, so I had to go through numerous reading sessions with them because they have different approach to acting. For example, Chang Cheng, who played the grandfather in my film, is from Vancouver, but he is Chinese. He is originally from Shanghai. And because he did a lot of comedy shows in TV, a lot of theaters, he has this slightly exaggerated, you know, body language that he uses for acting.
More theatrical.
More theatrical, yes. And for somebody like Chin Han, who worked as a theater director in London, but then he showed up in Contagion. He worked with a lot of great film directors, Chris Nolan, and so on, and Steven Soderbergh. And when I put them against each other to read these two roles, father and son, it was really interesting because, sure, there is supposed to be a generation gap, but then their acting style was so different. So what I did was I tried to actually utilize them, kind of embrace them to my own benefit to a certain extent. And after that, I sort of rubbed the rough edges around their actings and basically try to make the best out of them.
Michelle Yeoh is a great admirer of yours. I had an interview with her previously. What was it like working with her?
That's crazy because I admire Michelle like shamelessly. I try to follow her everything. Like,
so you've been planning this for a while?
Yes. She has been my inspiration because she is, I would say she is about the only one, arguably about the only one who went through all this like great period of Hong Kong cinema, but then also landed in Hollywood and also European cinema and successfully maintaining her career and really blossoming at this age. And whenever I look at her, I'm just can't help thinking that, my God, how does this woman do that? And I see the grace, I see the generosity, I see the respect that she's giving to others, and I kind of learned so much from her, so I really always wanted to work with her. And I was just really happy that she was willing to meet with me in Hong Kong.
So this was recently?
No. She and I have been known each other for a while, so about 2010 or even 9, Mickey, the vice chairman of CJ Entertainment Media, arranged a meeting for us because she knew that I really wanted to work with Michelle, and Michelle is always looking for young female Asian film directors to work with. She's a big supporter of them. So we had dinner together, and we started talking about this food project because food and family, they are the most important elements for Asian family, but also very universal. So we kind of crystallized this concept together almost. I mean, yes, I came up with the story, I worked with the writer, but still, she was always there to support
the
project.
Okay, so she was part of the whole project.
Absolutely.
Not only the executive producer on it.
Yes.
So she had a creative input.
Yes, she had a creative input. She had her insight, and I would always get inspired by her comments. Yep.
Okay, so this story was kind of improvised by the three of you, the writer, yourself?
It was more complicated than that. There was a lot of going back and forth. And I came up with the original premise because, okay, food, family, what do I do with it? What about competition? What about, you know, bringing all this like Pan-Asian actors and all those premises? So I wrote about like 10-page treatment and something like that, and kind of read it together with Mickey and Michelle, and they gave me input. And then with that input and everything, with my writer, I wrote the script. So
okay. I've been talking with Gina Kim, the director of Final Recipe, and we'll be back in a second. This is Dana Knight for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider. Fred Film Radio, we're back with Gina Kim, the director of Final Recipe. How long did that process take, the writing process?
The writing process itself, about a year, yeah.
long process.
Yeah.
And shooting the film?
Shooting the film, oh, compared to writing process, picnic, I think it was about 8 weeks, yes.
Okay. What would you say were the most challenging things in making this film?
Filming, cooking, live. I mean, when I was conceiving the project, when I was first coming up with this idea of making a food film, I was wondering, I mean, this is such a great subject. How come there are not more films about food? And when I started making, I realized why, because it's so hard. It's so hard filming, cooking, live, continuity problems, and one take and it's done. You have to start from scratch for another take. And it's hot, like 50 stoves or 100 stoves sometimes. On top of that, there are all this lighting equipment, heat, smoke, everything. It was extremely challenging, especially because of the heat. The ingredient, they don't stay fresh, so you have to keep getting like new fresh supplies. And by the time my actors are tired, and it was hard.
Did you at least get to eat the food at the end of every day?
To be honest, not really. No, there was no time. There was no time. As soon as the food shot was done, we were like so happy that, oh, this is done finally, so let's move on. So it was always the case, and I kind of would look at the food that we created and say bye.
But did you know that food is so popular with film festivals before making this film?
I didn't really know that there was such section as culinary cinema section here,
yeah,
really.
But other festivals have this section.
Yeah, some of the other film festivals, but I didn't know that that was just a major part of film festival these days. Yeah, no.
Exactly. And I wanted also to ask you about your style. Mm. When I researched your work, Martin Scorsese says you have a very intense and precise style. Mm-hmm. Is this how you'd describe it?
Marty said it for Never Forever, which is a drama, which is more like a auteur-driven drama, so that was slightly more intense and precise, I think, than this one. This is more accessible, more approachable for a general audience, so maybe it doesn't feel the same way, but somebody else also told me that it still has the detailed, painterly, pointillistic touch that is always there in all of my previous films. So I hope it is still there, yes.
And how did you get to meet Martin Scorsese?
Oh, that was a long time ago. So what happened was that when I was rehearsing with Vera Farmiga for Never Forever, Vera was doing some pickup shoot for the Departed, Martin Scorsese film. So basically in the morning she'd spend time with me, and in the afternoon she would spend time with Marty. Mm-hmm. So she was like going back and forth, and then to Marty she'd talk a lot about me, and Marty got just really, really curious about me. And Marty is a big fan of Korean cinema, and it just happens that I was also teaching Korean cinema at Harvard University. So he ended up inviting me at one point for a Sunday brunch, and we had great, great conversation, because not only I'm a big admirer of his films, I mean, who isn't, but also he is a big fan of Korean cinema and the kind of films that I make. So, yeah, we had an amazing conversation and kind of kept in touch, and that's how it all got started.
I wish you filmed that conversation.
Yeah, that could have been really, really, really amazing, because we talked about so many different things, just films in general, Italian cinema, Korean cinema, as well as the ontology of cinema. What is cinema really? How is it disappearing? The medium of a film, the convention, how we restore these great films from the past, and also, if you can believe it, we also talked about Greek tragedies, and it just happens
where it all comes from. Where it all comes from,
yeah, basically, yeah, all the great stories, especially because I mentioned to Marty that there is always like a very strong resonance to me, at least, that in all of his films it kind of is there is some sort of a feeling that he seems to have inherited from this great literature, great Greek, especially the tragedies, not the comedies, and especially when I mentioned like Hippolytus and those type of plays from that period. He was just so happy that he could communicate with me about those kind of things. So, yeah, those kind of conversations.
So, talking about this, what are your thoughts about the art of cinema?
Art of cinema.
You were saying that you're talking about maybe the death of cinema and disappearing. Where do you think it's going?
Well, I'm not too sure if I'm the right person to talk about it, but if you still want to listen to my just personal opinion, I think it is changing. Cinema is not dying, but it is just like evolving into something else than it used to be. I think that's how I see it. And if anything, I'm actually rather really optimistic about it, because sure, the old-fashioned film, the celluloid, is dying for sure, and it will be restored, kind of like all these great paintings are stored in museums and everything, so it will always be there. But
there's something vintage, maybe.
Yes, and it will always be treasured in that way. But then the future of cinema is changing because of all this like digital medium and internet and everything.
A new distribution platform.
Absolutely, and I am rather optimistic about it, because that's exactly what the video artists wanted to do during the 60s, but they didn't really have the distribution system to reach the general audience. So everything that they did in the 60s, you know, all these avant-garde artists and Fluxus and Magnum June, what they did, it just remained in the museum, never made their ways to a bigger audience. But then now it's possible, YouTube, Vimeo, all of these great platforms for new distribution made it possible for anybody wants to make film, can make film with iPhone and edit on their laptop and put it on YouTube, and there you have your distribution.
Exactly.
And
much
that's
more democratic.
Exactly. It's a democracy of the medium, and I actually embrace it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And a few words about your next project. Do you have anything lined up?
Yes, I have two projects lined up. I don't know which one will take off first. One is a little bit like Never Forever. It's Korean film set in Jeju Island, which is like Hawaii of Korea. And it's a very daring love story about a middle-aged woman who falls in love with a very, very young teenage boy. So there's that. The other one is a little bit like Thelma and Louise, but set in Joseon Dynasty, which is like 1700 or something like that. It's about
a period piece.
Yes,
period.
Absolutely.
You're very adventurous.
I love period piece, and I've always wanted to make a period piece. And it's about these two women who uses their feminine power, so to speak, to kind of lure all the men around them to their advantage, and kind of steals this important painting and runs away. So it's a fun period piece. Yes.
Sounds very intriguing.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for talking with us on Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.